Welcome back to Touring the Multiverse. I'm Mieka, and with me today is Casey. And we've been looking into one of the Magic the Gathering settings that 5th edition has adopted, Theros.
In this episode of our discussion, we're going to look at worship and devotion to the gods, as well as the worlds where the gods live and mortal souls travel to after they've died. We'll also be covering 3 unique monsters. But before we get started, let's talk about the optional piety rule set from the DMG, Dungeon Master's Guide. Okay, so piety is actually the renown system. It's just adapted to measure a character's link to the gods instead of an organization, essentially. So when using piety, you track renown with divine figures, usually gods. This makes much more sense in a campaign where gods are present and may take an active role. In Theros, they will take an active role.
Oh, yes.
So you have the option to select what entity you wish to honor and gain piety with, and there is the hope to gain favor as your rank increases. And so we're going to get into what exactly that means.
Okay. So when it comes to piety in Theros, it never really has anything to do with belief or devotion. It focuses more so on action. Specifically, a champion's action in a god's service. A player's piety score begins at 1. It increases whenever you do something that favors the gods. When piety surpasses specific thresholds, you gain abilities. If you do something that disfavors the gods, that benefit slash ability is lost. Piety isn't required, and you can exist in Theros without devoting yourself to a god. You just don't receive any of, like, the cool things slash abilities.
Yeah, and that really is the purpose. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, it is. But, like, as I have said, I even said that, like, when I play, probably won't be my first time playing, but maybe the second time I play in Theros, I'm just gonna not play with any of the piety and just see how it goes.
He's gonna be like a stubborn princess. He's like, I don't need any of that.
And I want Phoenix to like come after me to make me his champion. That's what I want. So
I feel like this could be an evolution of the same character where just a god takes you on as like a project. It's like, I am going to break her so that she accepts piety.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one. I like that. Thanks, Casey.
There you go.
I'm gonna write that down. Now, let's say you change gods. You'll lose everything, pretty much. So, let's say you are, like, maybe at, like, number 20 for piety. And according to Theros, we haven't been able to find, like, a maximum piety score. But let's just say you're up there. If you decide to change gods, your score reduces back down to 1. And that's only if the new god accepts you. So I highly suggest don't switch gods unless you know it's a for sure thing.
Yeah. Get that contract down. Mm-hmm. It's like changing major professions where, like, if there's no transferable skills, you're starting from scratch.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're working your way up the ladder again, starting with nothing and gaining as you go.
And, like, wouldn't it be something if, like, you, like, renounce the god that you have and then you go to another god? And it's like, they don't accept you, and then you're spending the campaign trying to get into, like, a god's favor.
Yeah.
And, like, to become that any god's champion. That would be pretty fun to play with.
Yeah. So, don't piss off the gods, mm-hmm. but also don't piss off your DM.
Exactly.
Ultimately, the DM may decide whether, you know, your sneaky plan of mm-hmm. abandoning this one and changing sides is gonna work.
Yep. As we get into gods more, it's important to know that they are pretty active in Theros. They're very much involved in mortal lives because they rely on mortal devotion. And just a side note, the gods are very active in Theros and, like, probably more so than in any D&D like world. Mm-hmm. They often enter the dreams of mortals and bestow spells for clerics. They can also come up with some pretty terrible curses as well. They can take on the form of anything they choose, but you'll most likely see them in, like, human form. Something cool that happens is that you can sometimes see them walk across the sky with, like, their feet disappearing just below the horizon. So it's like, think of this huge, huge giant just like going across like a landscape. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I imagine it like there's no thunderous step with that. It's just, you just see this motion in the sky.
Yeah.
And you can then maybe discern what it is.
Yeah. Another cool thing, any part of the god's body that isn't directly lit, take on the starry night sky of Nyx. So, like, throughout a lot of the pictures in the book, you'll see, like, that starry night sky wherever, like, the sun's not hitting the specific creature or god.
Yeah, it makes the art really cool.
Yeah.
Like, every monster I think we're going to, that there is art for, mm-hmm. has something like that, and it took me a moment to be like, I don't quite know what's going on there.
Yeah.
So that is very good to know, because mm-hmm. they lean into that a lot in the art.
Oh yeah, definitely. And another thing to know about gods, they don't know everything and they aren't all powerful. So like, they're powerful, but they're not all powerful. And they know a lot of things, but they don't know everything.
They just want you to think they know everything, mm-hmm. probably.
Oh yeah. And so, a thing I'm going to touch a bit on here, like, throughout this series, if you're DMing Theros, there's, you know, a lot of room here to be, I think, very, I don't want to say bossy, but you can kind of take on, like, you know, you can make a lot of decisions here. Don't be an ass. Like, that's all I'm going to say. And I think the book does a good job of kind of keeping all of that in check as well. And we'll get more into that as we, you know, throughout the series. A way to worship the gods comes in, like, many different forms. And honestly, the gods will eat up any type of worship. Whether you're pouring out, like, a bit of wine for the homies, or drinking the rest, or performing some type of ritual, the gods want this to happen, and they absolutely love it, and it just shows, like, the ultimate worship and devotion that the gods are constantly looking for to stay relevant.
Yeah, and this is something that, like, in any other campaign, you, unless you are really into all of the details about your cleric or your paladin, mm-hmm. you're not really going to focus on what your actions may do to influence your god
yeah.
or the gods.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, it's like you are thinking about that constantly.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So while you have champions who are devoted to a specific god's expectations, most mortals pray to specific gods for specific things. Clerics and champions focus on one specific god, though. It's an expectation for them to, and it's important to remember, if a god wants you, you don't have a choice, or you're going to have a very difficult time.
So that's kind of also how you can clearly define between, like, well, your players who are going to be heroes or champions, and then just a mundane human or NPC.
Mm-hmm.
Is they're going to kind of be able to connect with any of the gods, depending on what they need, but you are locked in.
Right.
You have signed the contract. Mm-hmm. You are committed. And no matter what kind of thing you're asking for, yeah. it's only one god that can give you, like, favor.
What you want, yeah. And even if you want to try to stray away, they're going to have an issue with it. Like,
oof. Fun.
Yeah. So as a DM, if you have a party and each player's character worships a different god, there are, like, ways to bring them together. Maybe the gods have joined forces to get rid of an enemy and they call on their best heroes. Or maybe there's just some friendly alliances between characters and gods that you can play on. Or maybe there's just something going on in a nearby city and the champions are like, look, we need to work together to get rid of this. You don't have to be the best of friends, but I think that last one's an interesting dynamic. Like, our gods don't really get along with each other, but we need to work together. We're the only people who can take on what's going on in this city.
Yeah. It's like you almost, they'll call a truce for like this specific thing. Mm-hmm. Because they also have their own egos. So it's like, well, if you're bringing your best champion, then I'll bring my best champion. Mm-hmm. And then the third one's like, well, I will bring my best champion. Mm-hmm. So you reach common ground and can't think of the word, but like everyone comes to an agreement because you're like competing for the same thing. Yeah. Like, bards would be able to wordsmith and be able to convince them probably to be like, see, this is fine. You guys aren't fighting. We're going to do it this way. Mm-hmm.
That would be such a funny dynamic.
Bard the mediator.
Mm-hmm. So gods can also provide blessings for their people. Think of them as a way to get their mortals or like champions to accomplish something. I'm going to touch on a few blessings from the book. And you can find these on page 114 in Theros. So the first blessing is the blessing of Farsight, and that requires 3+ piety. And so you have advantage on wisdom, perception checks that rely on sight. Another blessing is the blessing of protection, which requires 3+ piety. And as a bonus action, you can invoke your god's protection, providing you with a +1 bonus to your AC for 1 minute. And you can't use it again until like the next dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the blessing of resilience, which requires 3+ piety. When you're about to take acid, cold, fire, lightning, or thunder damage, you can use your reaction to gain resistance to that damage type until the end of your next turn. Once you use this blessing, you can use it again until the next dawn, which that's very useful.
Mm-hmm.
this next one requires 10+ piety, and it's the Eyes of Nyx. As an action, you can imbue your eyes with enhanced vision for 10 minutes. While the blessing is active, your eyes look like the starry void of Nyx. So that starry looking art that's like throughout the book. And you can see invisible creatures and objects within 60 feet, within 60 feet of you that are within your line of sight. And you can't use it again until next dusk. And then finally, you have the Weapon of Nyx, which requires 10+ piety. You can use a bonus action to cause one weapon you are holding to surge with divine power for 1 minute. On a hit, the weapon deals an extra 1d8 radiant damage. Depending on your god, it might deal a different damage type. And once you use this blessing, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest. That's interesting.
All right. Yeah, they're just, well, blessings. They're potentially pretty powerful add-ons, like giving you a lot of advantage, and then it's kind of like paladin-y abilities, and so it's cool. And I like that piety can go up or down, so you could potentially make it to 3 and start and use these in some way, but then if you royally fuck up and you drop down to 2, you no longer have those to, like, access to them.
Like, what a yo-yo effect, too. Like, if you're just, like, a player that's like, I'll do what I really want to do. I'm not going to, like, really follow the rules like that all the time. It's like you're going up and you're going down. So it's like you get 3 blessings, and then let's say your god takes away, like, 2. Then you're back down to 1, then you lose those 3 blessings, and then you get into a fight that you can't win. And
It can have consequence. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gods also provide emissaries. These are creatures whose only will is to fulfill a mission. So an example is a stag may appear to fulfill a mission for Heliod, which is, he's like the sun god. Miracles are also common here. Gods aren't limited to doing these. However, remember, direct god contact constantly doesn't really happen. So you won't, while the gods are like very active, they're not just going to be out there just throwing out like, here's a miracle for you. You get a miracle. So like these, you know, they are limited. They aren't limited in doing them, but don't expect them to happen all the time.
Yeah. That's the way they can be a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get into the ordeals now. Gods can also deal out ordeals for their champions slash heroes, especially when they ask for one. So how does one participate in an ordeal? So step one, you journey to Nyx. The characters must find a way to enter Nyx, which is, think Mount Olympus, the realm of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many ways to get there, but you have to find a way to get there. Once you're there, a hero will scream out a specific god's name that they want in ordeal. And specifically, they will scream out to get the god's attention. So you can say Erebos, which is the god of the underworld. I request an ordeal. And once you do that, if the god deems the character worthy, they'll show up and the character will fall into a trance and enter a dreamscape.
Okay.
So wouldn't that be funny? Like your party just watching you just do this? It would be crazy. Step three, when the god appears, they will decide what the ordeal will be. It can be like combat with like one creature or combat with multiple creatures, or maybe a series of ability checks. If you fail, no big deal. You just get nothing. They'll send you on their, you know, your merry way. But if you succeed, you can get a miracle or some type of intervention, supernatural gift, or a natural item.
Okay.
As a player, I would think of something outrageous. Like, I want something crazy. I know I won't get it, but I'm gonna try. But I thought that was actually, like, a lot of fun. That's, like, a cute little, like, side quest you can do to, like, get your god's attention.
Yeah.
Or any god's attention if you're feeling, you know, you want to, like, reach out a bit and see, you know, see what'll happen.
Right, because could that be a bit of a loophole to connect with another god? Is calling on an ordeal, potentially?
I think so, because they only grant ordeals to those that they consider worthy. And it's not something like, I don't think the gods would use it as a way to get someone on their side. It's more so like, you know, they think, okay, I think they're worthy. Let me see if they can do this. And then if they can, it's like, all right, here's your thing. You can go now.
Yeah. What came to mind for me is this is potentially an opportunity to reverse a major fuck up that your party might have did to mm-hmm. the point of potentially like resurrection. Like yeah. what if a beloved party member mm-hmm. has been killed by something? And so mm-hmm. you want to basically, an ordeal is basically like, let's make a deal.
Yeah.
It's like, let's come to the table. It's like, if I want to do this, and it could be a contest of a combat of some kind,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, in return, I'm asking you to like resurrect my friend,
yeah,
or talk to whoever can do mm-hmm. this kind of thing. That would be a hefty one, but I feel like that's where you could add that in if your yeah. players want to try and do something,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a TPK scenario. How can we take backsies?
Yeah.
In Theros. This could be one. It's like,
yeah.
Or like if you destroy a city and it's mm-hmm. like, could we just do something about that?
Like, could we rewind time? Yeah. Like,
it's like, could you help us out with fixing that?
Mm-hmm. No, I like that. That's a good idea to like use them, use ordeals.
And maybe you would pick somebody, especially if you are going to ask like your own god.
Mm-hmm.
If one of your party members has, you know, 15 piety with them, it's like, you're going.
Yeah.
You're doing
yeah,
it.
You go. You ask them.
Yeah. I'm not asking them. Yeah. You ask them.
Right. And I think it would be okay because it's like, if you're all working together, like, your god knows that, like, they're, you know, they're working with, my champion's working with these other champions to get to a common goal.
Yeah.
It's like, you can send, like, that bard to be like, can you go convince them? And because, you know, you'll succeed on this role.
Yep, absolutely.
Another way to interact with the gods includes omens. Gods can either send an omen or the player can request one. You can use omens as guides and don't have to stand for, and they don't have to stand for good things or bad things. And you can find the omen tables on pages 112 and 113 in Theros. So Casey,
these are fun.
Yes. I love this. You are going to do a roll for me.
So all right, let's do it.
So you're actually going to use 2d8.
Okay.
And
I'm rolling both?
Yeah, you're rolling both, and then let me know what they add up to.
Okay, I got a 3 and a 4, so for a total of 7.
So you need a d6.
Okay.
And we're going to look up an omen for him.
4.
4. A lightning-scarred tree stands alone in a forest clearing. That's interesting. So that's not, like, too crazy, but, like, pretty ominous.
Yeah, if you were traversing through a forest and you came out into grassland and then you saw, after, you know, a few hours of grassland, a singular tree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can see that.
And he is the only god that, like, deals with lightning, too. So it's like, oh, what does he want? What does this mean?
Yeah.
So, interesting. So, again, you can find the omens table on pages 112 to 113, and it's pretty cool.
I would want to...
Sorry.
I would want to roll one of these for every character, including NPCs, just to have a short list of them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as you're navigating through the world and whatever, wherever you end up being,
yeah,
like, they show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the smart way to do it. Sorry, I'm looking. A Pegasus appears and invites a character to touch it. Interesting.
It's almost like it could be like random encounters.
Yeah.
In the sense, like you could throw that scenario in at any point during travel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
DM should remember these three things. Don't eliminate character choice when you're playing in Theros. Don't eliminate risk or danger either. So you gotta find that like happy medium. And gods cannot control mortal actions, so don't make it a thing in your campaign. I think I might have touched on this like in the last episode or earlier in this episode. Gods are very much active in this world, so don't feel like you as a DM have to be all-knowing and you make all the rules and stuff. Still let your characters, like, guide the game. Because I feel like it's more fun that way, right?
So. Yeah, and, like, they're, especially if you are trying to, you know, do offerings and speak to them along the way, they're always kind of going to have a low-key eye on you.
Yeah.
And so you don't necessarily have to have them noticeably following or showing up all of the time. But they can show up at any time. Yeah. That's the freedom of it. It's like, okay, this is popping off. Okay, this god is going to be showing up and actually doing something.
Yeah.
Or maybe you end up deciding to roll for it. Mm-hmm. It's like, do they come or do they not? And the DM rolls and it's like, out of luck this time.
Yeah. I think that kind of answers the question, do you have any advice? But do you want to touch on any of those other questions, like, so anything that inspires you or plot ideas that you got?
I really like the omens part. I think that just sparks so many potential side quests, so many problems that might just derail your plans.
Yeah.
I think those are really fun. Use them. Just...
Yeah. No. There's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Use them, definitely. Yeah.
Or if you are struggling with coming up with complications or problems that might come along, if your party has to travel really far, don't even really necessarily have to have your players involved. Just roll some and have a short list of them. So it's like, when you sense that there needs to be something that happens, it's like, look at your list.
Oh yeah. It's
and like drop the perfect one in.
Thing. Yep.
Yeah. And then, you know, you get enough explanation. You could probably spin it to be connected to one of the players easily. Based on what god they have or what they're doing or their subclass or so there's just a lot. It opens up a lot, which I think is fun because you are in a specific world, and so it's just all going to be god based but you can still do those random encounters or those things that just happen like a regular campaign.
Yeah, totally agree. And I like the ordeals are, I think, my favorite thing because it's, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Add some fun and flavor. Maybe it takes a little less pressure off because you can look a lot of this stuff up. and just choose randomly or choose roll and see what happens.
And I also, like, I like the fact that if you fail, like, you're a player and you fail, like, your rolls, and it's, like, the only time where it doesn't matter. Like, if you fail, you know, it's not like you're dead or anything.
Yeah, that you is just, true.
Yeah.
And you can let the players dictate a lot of how that goes, too. It's like, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to say? What are you offering? It's like, you tell me what you want to do.
Definitely. All right.
Okay, so we're going to dive into monster stats. Okay, so we're kicking it off hot.
All right.
So, a Rasta of the Endless Web. Oh my goodness. Okay. So, you must look at the character art for this one.
Okay.
It is glorious. So, it's undoubtedly a monster Megan would love to encounter.
Ooh, she's not gonna like this.
No. A Rasta is one of three infamous mythic monsters of Theros. Once one of Nylea's most beloved dryad companions, but due to rivalry, Phoenix had her transformed into an arachnid, huge in size and driven into the dark depths of the Nessian wood. Here she broods over being cursed by the gods, causing her few humanoid features to become a thing of nightmares due to decades of hatred and cruel magic.
Oh, I know the lore for this because I think she thinks that she's, like, been lost forever.
Yeah.
I know this story, so she's actually... yikes. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the drama.
Yeah.
You'll find the woods full of webs. However, they are not made of silk, but made of her own hair. And...
oh, God.
Yes. So the art clearly depicts that as well. She has long white hair, and it flows out, and then looks like it becomes the webs around her. Amongst the woods, you will also likely encounter her devoted spies and followers that will gladly sacrifice themselves in her defense. Yeah, the art is phenomenal, to her hair, to that twilight comes in a lot with the sparkle, the purpley twilight sparkle, because she lives in the dark depths.
Yeah.
So it will absolutely be apparent. And even she has, like, this open, it's a, like a spider-like jaw and fangs, but also partly humanoid face.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really disturbing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So, a Rasta lives in a gnarled olive tree called an Arasi. It was planted long, long ago by Clothis.
Okay.
And is said to bear fruit that offers glimpses of the future should it be eaten. That doesn't come without risks, however. Not only could you be driven mad, but then you are also within the grasp of a Rasta. She can sense any vibrations in her webbing, and it is rumored there is a path to the underworld that travelers can follow her webs to reach. So it's like she is drawing creatures to her so that she can take them and, like, devour them. So this is one reason somebody might navigate through these woods and then encounter her if they have a need to get to the underworld. This is an option. So you will experience lair actions in the Nessian wood where she can gain insight on you through her webs and send a giant spider after you long before you encounter her. Additionally, there are regional effects that influence spiders and insects within 1 mile of her lair to serve as eyes and ears for her. And she can fill 10-foot cube open spaces with webbing where they can be anchored between two solid masses like two trees. So anywhere she can, she will fill it with that hair webbing.
Yeah.
It will trap flying creatures and make it very difficult to navigate through. If Arasta dies, the link to those spiders and insects dissipates, but the webs dissolve slowly in 1d10 days. So, Arasta is a CR of 21. She is a huge monstrosity that is neutral evil, and her spider-like body provides an AC of 19 natural armor, as she boasts a very hefty 300 hit point average.
Whoa.
This is your big battle.
Yeah, it is.
Or run away.
Oh, run away. I'm running away. I'm running away.
She has a 40-foot walking and climbing speed. So the mythic monsters of Theros all have a mythic trait. Arasta has armor of spiders. If Arasta is reduced to 0 hit points, she does not die or fall unconscious. She regains 200 hit points, calling her children to her. They arrive in waves and swarm across her body to grant her an additional 100 temporary hit points.
Oh my gosh.
This trait recharges after a short or long rest. Arasta is a mythic encounter with her armor of spiders, so that it is essentially equivalent to two CR21 creatures that you're fighting. Because you fight her and bring her to zero, she will pop back up with this armor and have 300 hit points again.
Oh no.
Yep.
That's too much.
This battle, it will be relentless. Mm-hmm. Like, you will need everything you can to try and defeat her. She has legendary resistances, 3 per day, magic resistance, spider climb. Her movement is not impacted by her web, of course, but yours will be.
Of course.
In fact, she can unleash her hair as an action with a recharge of 4 to 6 to fill a 30-foot cube next to her. 30-foot cube next to her. This is now difficult terrain, lightly obscured, and lasts 1 minute. If a creature moves into that web or starts its turn there, it must make a DC 21 dex save. On a fail, the creature is restrained while in the web. The creature, or a creature within 5 feet of it, can use its action to try and free them from the web by succeeding on a DC 21 strength check. That's a high DC. The web is also immune to all damage except for magical fire. And only a 5-foot cube at a time can be destroyed when it takes at least 20 fire damage from a spell or other magical source on a single turn. So, like, if shit starts going bad, she can just put out this web that just wholeheartedly surrounds her.
Yeah.
And now you're fighting through that just to get to her, all at the risk of being restrained. And you do not want to be restrained.
No, absolutely not.
She can do more to the people that are, or the creatures that are restrained. So, I mean, as a minor detail along with that, she can use her action to make 3 attacks, which is 1 bite and 2 claw attacks. And her bite can cause the target to make DC 21 con save, or take 5d12 poison damage.
Oh my god.
And half on a successful save.
5d12?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. That's her bite. If this reduces the target to 0 hit points, the target is stable but poisoned for 1 hour, even after regaining hit points, and is paralyzed.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And abilities continue. She has 3 legendary actions that she can take, choosing from 1 claw attack as a legendary action. She can unleash 2 swarms of spiders, which is the swarm of spiders stat block. Or she can use Toxic Web, which deals 4d8 poison damage to any creature that is restrained by her web of hair. So if you are sitting there restrained, trying to get yourself out, or someone else is trying to get you out, she can deal this as a legendary action and give you 4d8 poison damage.
She can just, like, throw it at you while you're restrained.
It just adds on.
Wow.
So what sets these creatures apart in the world of Theros truly is mythic actions. So while she has her armor of spiders on, so you have destroyed her, you have brought her to 0 hit points, and she does the armor of spiders, she gets additional legendary action options in that mode. Wow. So she can then make 2 claw attacks if she wants. She can recharge the web of hair, which is that cube. So if you destroy that, she can then do it again. If she's in that form. And she also can use Nyx Weave, where creatures restrained by the web of hair must succeed on a DC 21 con save, or this time take 4d12 force damage. And then any spell 6th level or lower that has been put on Arasta will just end. So...
just end.
So that, like, that is it.
Like, are you sure?
Yeah.
Because that was a lot.
Yeah. Like, wow. it doesn't end. And, everything is so cool and so unique. It would be mentally exhausting running this battle, though.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. But such cool abilities, and just once you think you understand how to defend yourself in that, or get yourself out of the web and you're fine, or sometimes it's like, oh, I'm going to stay here and then cast spells instead, because I can't move, I'll just cast some spells. Oh, well, here's some poison damage. Oh, and then later on it's like, oh, well, now it's force damage. Relentless. Like,
you cannot win.
Yeah, it is wild. I was shocked and impressed.
I want to hear from people who have actually fought her. I
want to know and live to tell the tale.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to know how that encounter went. That's, oh wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and the art also depicts like the sea of her children kind of coming to cover her. And again, it's so creepy. But
yeah, Megan is, yeah. She is not going to like that. The sea of children too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, what were your favorite aspects and details?
Well, I think the whole purpose, I'm going to glaze by it just simply because you must always do the armor of spiders. Because it's like, it's that you have, pause to let your players think the creature is down with 0 HP. And then you just hear some skittering. And you hear these sounds and this rumbling, and then you start seeing the forest move. And then suddenly it is just swarmed and covered. And even then you might be like, are they like going to take their dead mother away?
Yeah, like, are they going to eat her now?
Yeah, like, what is happening? And then she rises again.
I'm taking off in the other direction. Oh, that is crazy to me that she'll just get back up and it's like, oh. Yeah. Never mind, back up to 300 hit points.
Yep. Ugh. Like, it is devastating. So that is truly what you do with these mythic monsters. And, like, over the course of the episodes, I know we'll cover the other two. So aside from that epicness, you can do a bite attack and a claw attack, because that is going to be really shitty. But the webs... and just that additional damage you can do with catching creatures in the webs. And the webs have such, like, the web itself, what was it, had, it's a 30-foot cube. And so, like, it truly will totally surround her. So you have no choice but to try and destroy the web or, like, slice your way through it. Yeah. Inevitably, one or more players are going to get stuck in it. And then are you going to, as, like, the comrade, are you going to waste your actions to try and pull them out? Or what are you going to do? So then there's that battle as well. Yeah. What do you think? What drove you?
Oh, my gosh. It's the... I think I'm with you with the, like, spider children coming to save her and stuff, but I'm stuck on the whole lore aspect of it with the, what was the, she was friends with which god again? Or goddess?
Nylea.
Yeah, so, like, what if... you have a champion of that god, mm-hmm. and you actually defeat this thing. And, like, you tell your god about it, and she gets pissed.
Yeah.
Because she, like, I'm not 100% sure, but I think Nylea doesn't know what happened, like, to her.
Yeah.
I just know that Phoenix wouldn't tell her or whatever, and just, like, you know.
Yeah, so doesn't know that she exists in, like, barely the form she was
exactly.
originally, but she still exists in, like, the mm-hmm. deep, dark woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you, like, have killed her.
Ooh. That like, piety is going down.
Yeah. You're back down to one. Like, I think that would be, like, an interesting, like, plot point for, like, DMs to work with or...
Yeah.
That would be so cool. Because your character... Or, you know, your player may not know if they haven't read the book. And so to, like, learn of this story that's happened, it's like, ooh, I yeah. didn't know. Like, I didn't know.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And alternatively, if another player in your group follows Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe that you can allow them to do some sort of role, and then you yeah. discover that Phoenix did this. To oh this gosh. Creature, and then there's that. It's like, does that player say anything, or are they just like, ah, she'll be mad if I destroy her like creation?
Yeah. Right. It's, oof.
Yep.
Yeah.
Optics.
All right. So stepping away from crazy spider lady, we are going to learn about Nyx, which is otherwise known as the Realm of the Gods. So, I said this last episode, when you think of Nyx, think of like a Mount Olympus type of situation. Nyx has an expanse of a very starry, like, night sky. It's a very cosmic place with some, like, earthly-inspired places. And then you can find, like, there are gods reside here, so you can see them kind of, like, in their own, like, little spots within Nyx.
Like, they all have their own cul-de-sac.
Yeah, they do, actually. Like, you know, Afarah is, like, down by, like, the Mystic Sea, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's, like, a whole lot of that. It's kind of cute, actually. So, I'm gonna break down some of the places that you can find in Nyx. One place is Mount Hyatos. And this is, like, a drifting mountain with, like, a huge golden orb, like, at the top of it. And it says that the orb is actually, like, the light source for all of Nyx. And without it, there's just, like, darkness. So it's, like, you're just getting that, like, starry, deep
yeah,
sky.
Yeah, that twilight's, like, mm-hmm. star purpley-blue.
Yeah. Next, we have the Mystic Sea. The Mystic Sea is more than just water and mist. Here you can find manifestations of mortal secrets and unimagined concepts, which I found to be very interesting. I think in a lot of, like, Greek mythology or, like, shows and stuff, they show, like, the gods, like, around some type of, like, watery, like, bowl or something, and they're able to see. You know what I'm talking
yes,
about?
Yes, yeah.
So that's what this is. So this is where manifestations of mortal secrets and unimagined concepts are. And I think it's a way for the gods to stay one step ahead of, you know, what the mortals are thinking. Because, again, they need mortals to stay relevant and to stay, like, you know, in power, quote-unquote.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like... I can think of major fantasy series having some version of this. Like, yeah. It's in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. It's in like, Harry Potter. It's not yeah. seeing kind of current dreams, mm-hmm. but it holds memories.
Yeah.
So you, like, they would put their face in it and yeah. then be able to view a memory.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all, like that.
Yeah. Finally, we have the Tovian Fields, and here is just constant nonstop war that's going on. So just an endless battle, but, like, nobody's getting tired. It's just, like, this ongoing, like, war and battle, and it's pretty interesting.
Oh, my God.
And so that's all that Nyx has to offer. So at Mount Hyatos, we have several gods that make their homes in the mountain slopes. Heliod maintains a sprawling palace of gold and white marble. Of course he does. think of him as kind of like Zeus.
Yeah.
Perseus maintains a forge beneath the mountain where he crafts philosophies, energies, and creations that would be impossible to manifest in the mortal world. Kyrnos, he lives in the summit of the mountain where he sends lightning bolts of inspiration to manipulate forces throughout dreams and the cosmos. Nalia, too, is known to visit Mount Hyatos, maintaining a sanctuary there within an ancient knotted wood. Within the sea, we have Thassa's palace that floats underwater. Its buildings are suspended in giant bubbles that drift with the currents. And at the edge, we have is a city of that's in divine copper and marbleized hopes. And this is where Afara makes her home. The Tovian Fields is where you kind of get the twins, Mogis and Arois. Mogis is very slaughter heavy, and Arois is very like, you know, there's organization to war, like that's his whole thing.
Okay.
And this is where they kind of have their like war tents, and they lead this endless battle that's going on there. Crufix, he's the god of horizons, and I think we're going to talk about him in the next episode. He doesn't maintain a central residence. His influence binds the conflicts encompassing all perspectives and preventing the battle from spilling forth into the rest of Nyx. So he's kind of like near what's going on in Tovian Fields and like making sure that it just doesn't get out of hand.
Interesting.
And so that doesn't touch on all of them, but like the majority of them have so, their own little place.
I see. It's like, It's very simple. You got your mountain, your sea, and then your field.
Yeah.
And they, depending on which gods have decided to go where, they have mutually agreed to carve out spaces in each of those three and just do their thing.
Yep.
Yeah. It's much less complicated than I thought.
Yeah. Like, you would think it's, like, this big, like, you know, it's like, no, we're just chilling.
Yeah.
Like, so how do you feel about Nyx overall? It's like, it's not, they don't give us a whole lot, and I was expecting there to be like more than one page on Nyx.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I think I was too. I was expecting to have a lot of complexities around hierarchy and more detail on different realms and different regions. But it really is straightforward. So if you really need to find somebody in Nyx, it's not as hard as I thought. So that was a bit surprising. But it has everything you need, I mean.
Yeah, like they have the basics. It's like, whatever.
Yeah. So naively, I feel like when we dive into the other pieces like the underworld, that's where we might get much more complicated. So I'm kind of look forward to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
You know, it's very simple, and it's, it kind of also makes sense because the gods are so involved in, like, what the mortals are doing that they really don't need, like, a huge, extravagant, like, you know, place to, like, live. I guess, like, you know, they have their palaces within Nyx, but they don't need it to be extra. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a good point. That is not their focus.
Right.
It's of, like, monitoring their worship.
That is what they are concerned with. So that's what they're going to, like you just said, that's what they're going to focus on.
Yeah, that is a good point. And it makes a little more sense that way. Okay. So let's move on to another monster. We have the Nyx Fleece Ram.
All right.
So this is really, truly, actually a ram, like a sheep. but it can grow magical wool due to being touched by the gods. It is therefore very valuable and requires divine servant guards to protect them from being stolen. They can be found typically in the highest peaks in Theros and look very much like a regular ram in the art. Just that does have that bit of aura around the darker pieces have that sparkling stars. With the curved horns. So the fleece from this beast can be made into a magical garment. So long as the creature is not damaged during the shearing, the wearer of the garment must attune and then will receive favor of the gods. This benefit is chosen by a D6 roll and can be like a plus one bonus or an advantage or even casting abilities. And there is a table along with next to the stat block for this creature. So the Nyx Fleece Ram is a medium monstrosity with an AC of 14 from natural armor. It has a speed of 40 feet, but only 27 hit point average. Aside from intelligence, all of the stats are above average. And it has a CR of 1. It is literally a ram. So if provoked, the ram will ram. that's its attack action. It has a plus 5 to hit one target and will deal bludgeoning and force damage on a hit. But it can also charge. So while moving at least 20 feet straight forward at a target and hitting with the ram attack on the same turn, it can then deal an extra 1d4 bludgeoning damage. So it's essentially, it gains more momentum for that ram attack, and so it does more bludgeoning damage on that.
Okay.
And if the target is a creature, then it must succeed on a DC 13 strength save or be knocked prone. you land on your ass.
Yeah.
But yeah, it can certainly charge and hit like an object if, you know, it's trying to break free or something like that. And so in that case, there wouldn't be the knocked prone DC to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the ram does have magical resistance and is sure-footed, meaning it has advantage on strength and dex saves against effects that would knock it prone. So it will try to knock you down and it will be harder to knock it down. But that is it. it's just, you know, a cute little monster.
And if you, like, happen to take the, like, the wool or its, or the fleece or whatever from it, it can, I guess, help out.
Yep. And, I mean, I see this as a challenge. I see your god telling you, I need you to go get the fleece. I need the fleece.
Yep.
So here you go up the mountain. You're going to have to defeat the protectors and then try and wrangle this ram and get it sheared without damaging it.
There's your ordeal. Yep. And, like, this ram is just gonna, like, I want this ram to give, like, characters a hard time.
Oh, yeah. And there's not gonna be just one. Mm-mm. Like, there's probably not gonna be hundreds, but there is going to be, like a fenced-in field of them.
Yeah.
And they're probably gonna be really awesome, but you're gonna have to, like, that's how I see these, happening in an encounter, is that you have been given an impossible, like, task. It's like, retrieve me some fleece from the Nyx Fleece Rams. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, that sounds
like,
easy.
That's easy. Nope, not if they're all, like, you know, hitting you with, like, bludgeoning damage and all that. Like,
yeah.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we're gonna take a turn to go into the underworld.
Yes!
Yes. I like the underworld a whole lot better. So it's a bit heftier than Nyx, so let's break it down. It exists on a plane outside the mortal realm. Here you can either thrive or exist miserably, depending on your life. And I'm going to hit on the notable places. So first we have to begin at the Tardix River. When you first arrive, you arrive on the banks of the Tardix River. So you have died, and when you awaken, this is where you are. In order to cross it, you must have some form of payment to Atheros. And this is a huge river. Like, you cannot see one shore, like, from the other, one shoreline from the other. Like, it just goes. And it's just swimming with, like, all types of creatures. And the one thing that stood out to me was the fact that there are islands, but they're all abandoned. And I'm like, what are on those abandoned islands? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm curious. And there's so much you can do with that as a DM. The next place I'm going to talk about is Agonis. And this is home for those who battled without honor. So think I said mercenaries, cowards, soldiers, and warriors who just like fought without any honor. In this place they get pushed into like endless battles with just like huge stadiums and platforms, and all they do forever is just fight, and it's very, very rocky. So like unpleasant. So it's like, you know, you wanted to battle so much in life and you wanted to do without, like, you know, you wanted to be a problem, mm-hmm. about, you know, then this is what you'll do forever.
Yeah, and there is no way to change that. Nope. Like, technically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Next you have Phileus, and this is home of the uninspired and didn't achieve much in life. And this is where I think purpose is going.
Oh my god!
I think this is where my character purpose in our campaign will probably end up.
No! Imogen would never let it happen.
Yeah, you better come and get me. Get me out of here. So like I said, this is the home of the uninspired and didn't achieve much in life. They spend the afterlife just doing repetitive tasks, and it's all just so mundane. Like, everything here is just very plain and lifeless. There's no art. There's just no nothing. It's just so boring. It's so boring to the fact that no one greets you when you get there. You just arrive and it's just like,
and you start doing mundane shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to be here.
This is all of the heroes that only could get participation ribbons, and that's it. It's like, look, dude.
Yeah.
This is where you gotta go.
Yes, like, can't do anything about it. Have fun doing the same thing over and over again. Oh, hate it.
Yeah.
All right, next is Ilesia, and this is the home of heroes and those who died unfairly. And the cool thing about this is Erebos, who is the god of the underworld, he has no influence here, which is pretty cool. This is a place of peace. The Citadel of Destiny that sits in the middle of this paradise-like landscape is where they honor the gods, and they just, like, hang out and, you know, just be happy. It's like, you know, we were heroes. We were, we did our thing in life, and now we get to just live in peace and not have to worry about any type of evil.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I want to go there.
Me too. That's where I need to go. That's where my character purpose wants to go. So yeah, I think that's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
The next place is Nerona. This is where you go if you were someone who was lost at sea or haunted by memories. So maybe you were just very disturbed in life if you weren't much of like a sea person. I thought this was very specific. While there can be some powerful storms here, it's not all bad. It's just not good. So it's almost... It has this kind of like haunting feel about it, but it's not terrible, but it's also not like a positive place like Ilesia.
Yeah, and it looks like this is the art on mm-hmm. these pages is from Nerona.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. It looks like you are this tiny pawn in a massive, immense space. Because, mm-hmm. like, if those are chains to somewhere, like, those chains look incredibly huge.
Yeah.
And it looks very, almost ethereal. Like, yeah. It's like those must be the memories that kind of spark light and mm-hmm. look a bit like starlight.
Yeah.
Very good art in this book. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They, like, A plus for the art. The final place is the Tizerus. Here is where the murderers and those who have done unforgivable things are sent to. And this is where you can find Erebos' palace, the god of the underworld, right there in the middle.
Oh boy.
This place is described as a wasteland of black rock. There is also a part called the Mire of Punishment where these terrible souls can get stuck and just live a terrible existence and like just be tormented by demons, and they're just stuck in this like punishment mire. It's crazy. When they first get there, they are dragged away by demons and underworld harpies and like other beings. Oh. So you die, yeah. You wake up on the Tardix River, and you're like on your way, and they take you to Tizerus, and you are just dragged away by demons, and like that is where you're going, and good luck.
Yeah, horror.
You're gonna need it. A way you can like engage your players in the underworld can be like, you know, you're retrieving like a lost soul, like if a character dies.
Totally.
Yeah. And then you can, or you can kind of like tell the story of a descent of maybe an NPC into the underworld, whether it's positive or negative. It's like a lot you can do to like engage with like the underworld. So that's it.
Yeah, and like you said, it doesn't necessarily have to be an awful experience, mm-hmm. though more than likely it will be. But you could be potentially trying to find a soul in Elysia, mm-hmm. where you just need some information from them. Yeah. And so you get to go and see this, like, wonderful, peaceful world that this beloved person who has died is now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, that's comforting.
Yeah. And it's like, I want to come here, so I'm going to make sure I do what I need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I like that. I think as a DM, I want to explore Nerona. I feel like they explain what it is, but you don't get too much clarity. And I think that's kind of the point of it, you know? I feel like it would be great to just, like, explore and kind of make up your own things of, like, what's going on there.
Yep. Especially if you have some players that are tied to water. Mm-hmm. Like, you have Genasi or some sort of, like, I don't know. Like, there's so many. And so that could be a tie-in of why you end up going there for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I think we answered the plot ideas part of this conversation and about the underworld. So let's jump into the next thing.
Amazing. We're going to talk about another monster, the Abhorrent Overlord.
Mm.
Okay. We've got some spicy ones today. Yeah. Let me just flip to get the art on this one for you.
That spider was wild.
Yeah, yeah. By far, we started off hot. Mm-hmm. all right, so the Abhorrent Overlord is a fiend and does, like, look so. Mm-hmm. It looks like that. 'Cause Theros has demons.
Yeah.
Souls who refuse to let go of what happened in life and are hateful in death eventually transform into fiends of the underworld. And Theros calls these fiends demons. They have immortal nature where they do not require food, drink, or sleep. And one notable type of demon is the Abhorrent Overlord, characterized by dark gray leathery skin, but adorned with bright underworld gold jewelry. They are bipedal, and all they want is to seek treasure and treasure only. Mm. They destroy whatever tries to stop them in their quest.
Interesting.
Yeah. I would like to see a miniature of this, because I would like to just, the stark difference between, like, in the art, it truly is, like, black skin,
mm-hmm.
and then just bright, bright jewelry, like, on the wrists, on the neck, on the head, and, like, the waist, like, every part you could put any type of gold jewelry on, it has it.
Fancy demons.
Yeah. And it also looks like it has a cape, so, you know.
Yeah.
Is that a cape? Or is that, like, some sort of winged, like, their wings? Thing?
I think it's their wing.
Oh, yes, because they do have fly speed. Yes.
Yeah.
So that is their... That's
it does,
like,
look like a cape, but yeah. Because
it's
wing.
Red.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay.
So harpies, vultures, crows, and other scavengers tend to follow overlords for the likelihood of warm meat. They are destructive. They're only looking for treasure. And they really aren't deterred by the overlord's lack of loyalty towards them. They will easily and happily destroy them if they get in their way.
Mm.
But nonetheless, they follow them. And so the Abhorrent Overlord is a large-sized fiend that is typically lawful evil with an AC of 16. And unfortunately, that gold jewelry does not give any armor effect. It just is what it is. It has a hit point average of 136, a walking speed of 30 feet, and a fly speed of 60 feet. Mm. They're kind of small wings for that, but you know, yeah. We don't judge size.
No, we don't. maybe a little.
anyways. So at a CR of 9, all stats for this monster are above average with additional saving throws and skills in its stat block. Gives you a little bit more to work with as a DM. It also has damage resistances to cold and necrotic and is immune to poison damage and the poisoned condition. It does have dark vision of 120 feet and it knows abyssal, common, and infernal. I feel like that is very, very classic fiend and, like, underworld type stuff. Mm-hmm. Along with magic resistance, the Overlord has innate spellcasting abilities using charisma. It can cast once per day, confusion, crown of madness, and suggestion. It has insatiable greed. It can sense presence of gold within 1,000 feet of itself, including the location and direction of the greatest pile of gold. If the pile is being moved, it can sense the direction of the movement. However, clay or lead will block the direct path between it and the gold. Oh, okay. Like, it is truly driven, like, innately by finding gold and finding treasure.
Interesting.
Yep. So the Overlord has multi-attack for 2 claw attacks, and it deals slashing and necrotic damage, and it has an ability to gain hit points equal to half the necrotic damage dealt. So it heals itself if you are in combat. Its most interesting ability, though, is Storm of Crows. Hmm. So on a recharge of 6, the Abhorrent Overlord can conjure a swarm of spectral crows and harpies in a 20-foot radius sphere centered on a point it can see within 120 feet of it. This sphere of crows and harpies lasts 1 minute, or if the Overlord loses concentration. The area is lightly obscured and is difficult terrain. If a creature attempts to move into the area for the first time on a turn or starts its turn there, it must make a DC 15 con save or take 3d10 slashing damage and 3d10 psychic damage on a failed save and half as much on a success. Yeah, if you're going to try and walk through a swirling swarm of crows and harpies, you're going to get scraped and clawed and slashed. Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like the DC con save should be a little higher for that, but I guess it's in alignment with the CR of 9. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's it. Like, it's not, like, more complicated than the ram today, but nothing compared to the first monster we talked about.
Right.
But yeah, it does claw attacks, and then it has this storm of crows it can do.
Okay. I immediately thought of, like, a plot idea. Like,
okay, let's hear it.
You're in the underworld. The party just reached the underworld. You make it down the Tardix River, and let's say from maybe earlier in the campaign, an evil NPC who you defeated has turned into one of these things and drags, like, the player that dealt the final blow or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's your job to, like, find that player, and that means you have to go to... What's the name of that place? You have to go to the, to Tizerus to try to, like, figure out, like, where they are and to rescue them.
Yeah.
You gotta try to get through the mire of punishment and all that. Like, that right there. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. And what if it has the ability to, like, basically control and tell you what you have to do? And so it makes that character that killed it just sift and find gold for it and treasure.
Yeah.
So it's, like, sifting through, like, the remnants of people's items and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just all you do endlessly is search for any sort of treasure, coin, thing of value, and you bring it back to it.
Ew. That's too much work. But it's that, yeah, that right there, like working for that demon. And it's, I think that's the worst punishment of all. It's like, I don't get to go to a place, I gotta work for a demon. like I'd rather go somewhere than like do this.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah. I like that there's like a new fiend type demon creature that's been added in.
Yeah.
It's got some interesting flavor. Mm-hmm. Not super complicated, but just another option as mm-hmm. well.
And the Storm of Crows is kind of, that's interesting too.
Yep.
20-foot radius sphere. Yeah, that's... Oof.
Yeah, and, like, it can put it, like, up to, like, 120 feet away.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like it's not necessarily gonna... It's going to try and drop that so that it can just move on.
Yeah.
I feel like it will put that in your way
mm-hmm.
and then be like, I'm going, like, I need to move this way because it's
yeah.
drawn to, like, where the gold is.
Yeah, it's, like, focused. So it's all like, you guys want to fight me? But it's like, here, deal with that. I'm like, looking for my gold.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that would be the way I would use that ability.
Yeah.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode in our monthly discussion on Theros. Don't forget to check out some of the other series on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube and other podcast apps, and become one of our patrons to get access to bonus episodes, book reviews, discussions on homebrewing details, and the It's a Mimic campaign builder.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Touring the Multiverse on the It's a Mimic channels. If you'd like to support us, we have a donate button on our website, itsamimic.com, a store with some It's a Mimic merch, and a Patreon. But one of the best things you can do is share, like, subscribe, comment, leave reviews, and make posts about It's a Mimic and this series. Engagements like that help us create more content for you to consume. But even if you don't, I want to say thanks for listening to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get.
Let's go to the underworld.
Yes. Let's go. There's a lot to do in the underworld. I want to go.
Yeah.
I just don't want to stay there right
yeah.
now.
I'm like, let's go find people and yeah. talk to people.
Exactly. Let's go talk to people. Let's go figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
But like,
use some of that bard ability. Mm-hmm. Like, hey.
Yeah. We are on the same page. Like, just like, I don't want to be trapped there.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.